This episode contains some chat that might be hard to hear for some listeners. If that sounds like it might apply to you, then please do go and check out the show notes for more details. It's very, very important. Hello and welcome to Happy Place. I'm Fern Cotton and this is the show where you can forget about your troubles and your strife, or at the very least, overcome them, hopefully, by listening to the troubles of others. Today we meet the lead singer of one of my favourite bands, long-term fan, Biffy Clyro. It is, of course, Simon Neil.
There's been a couple of times where I've felt a layer of guilt about singing about, you know, my mum passing away. And it took me a couple of years to realise, no, that's what makes me make art. I don't want to get up in the morning and write a song just about my breakfast or something.
Now, Simon and I have met several times over the years, but we only really have ever had the chance to speak for a few minutes because of the nature of TV and radio. And I've always sort of come away wanting to just dig a little bit deeper. And thankfully, on this podcast, I can do whatever I like, quite frankly. He does not disappoint.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Should we do it? Here's the show. Simon, this is such a treat. I'm so glad we're getting to chat today. Historically, I would talk to you or interview you for about 8 minutes max, but we can just forget the rules today and just keep on talking, which is so nice.
What a pleasure. Well, it's lovely to see you, Fern.
I hope things
are all good.
I saw you.
It could be about 3 or 4 years. You're off doing your thing. We're still grafting away in the music world. As it changes and evolves.
As you know, I'm a huge fan of yours and always have been. So it's just amazing to always follow your career. How have you found this very weird year? Obviously, there's no touring, there's no live music scene. How have you found that?
I think like most people, I've felt kind of unsettled at points, a bit down at other points, and then feeling liberated sometimes. You know, we kind of create these little rituals and routines we have, and we put our pressure on ourselves to maintain productivity. And actually, what I've found the most positive is trying to get off that kind of treadmill of onto the next thing. And it took me a few months to kind of get here. You know, I've been describing it to my friends as, because we've just put a record out. As you say, normally we go on tour and everything, but I feel like the final frame of the Thelma and Louise movie, where we're like just about to do something and it's just paused, and you know, you've no idea what's happening next, but we're kind of mid-flight. But I feel very fortunate that my friends and family are well, and I've got food on the table and a roof over the head. So whenever I get too down about how unsettled everything and everyone is, I just remember that, and I'm grateful. But yes, strange times. I mean, strange for you as well, you know.
I mean, I'm recording these podcasts with a blanket over a cupboard to bounce the sound off. I mean, it's like, what's going on? I'm interviewing amazing people, and I'm like, look at my shitty little blanket behind me on a wardrobe. But we're all just having to adapt, and I think we are finding new ways of being creative, and that there is a bit of excitement there. And I'm, you know, similarly to you, trying to not be overly productive and know that it's all right just to stop and like have these moments to pause. And I'm not habitually very good at that. I do lean towards trying to do too much. So it has been a really interesting time. Luckily, you guys already had recorded an album that you slightly delayed the release on, but it came out this year. Again, an incredible album.
Thank you.
A celebration of endings and sort of very spooky thematically. What you were working with way before this pandemic hit, you were kind of dancing around some of the subjects or things that we're dealing with now, I guess.
You know, the last few years, I think the world has become a lot more tumultuous than perhaps when you and I were kind of in our teenage years. You know, things seemed, I was kind of worried about romance, about going out and getting, having a drink, you know, like my choices of career, little things like that, that nowadays are kind of, can't be taken for granted, anyone's choice of career or occupation. But I definitely was going through a period where I felt like I needed to be in control of how I react to things. That's basically where it came from. There was a couple of long-term working relationships we had that came to an end, and it wasn't desirable for either party, and it kind of shook me to my foundations and the band to the foundations. But we found a way through it, and part of that was just not letting it become oppressive, or not letting the negative side of it and the sadness of the deterioration of a relationship actually affect moving forward. Because we're kind of trained to think if something finishes or comes to an end that it's immediately a bad thing. You know, that, you know, normally you think, oh, I wish that was still going on. And actually there is a liberty to moving forward and having choices, having opportunities, and kind of trying to savor those opportunities. Because sometimes we train ourselves, as I said earlier, about being into one kind of lane and doing one thing. And it sometimes takes something tumultuous or like a trauma of some sort to shake you up. And it makes you realize what you truly cherish and what is actually important to you. So I kind of went through that a couple of years ago, you know, mentally and kind of outwardly with relationships. And then this year, as we've been talking up the album, you know, the virus was peeking around the corner. You know, like everyone else, I wasn't aware of how dangerous it was going to be. I think there was a comfort in the distance initially, where it's like, oh, that's the other side of the world. But as we all know, the world's a small place now, but it did feel a long way away. So I feel like what I've been contending with, and everyone else has been contending with this summer and this year, is kind of what I was trying to find my way through a couple of years ago. So yeah, it's given me a level of fortitude at the moment to kind of deal with the unknown, which I think is probably the most unsettling part to any human, is not having that level of control, or, you know, knowing what's around the corner. We like to think we can control our lives and control our destinies, but really, who knows where we're going to end up, you know?
We are wildly out of control at every minute of the day. But if we really sit and think about that, we wouldn't leave the house. But of course, you know, that's the truth for all of us. And it's so interesting because, like you say, we all try and plan what's coming next, whether that be in our personal lives, working lives, whatever, you know, just planning to meet a friend, you know, at the weekend, whatever. All those sorts of measures make us feel safe. And mm-hmm. I think this year, like you say, the most unsettling thing is that being ripped from beneath us, that there is no safety net, because we're just all sort of free falling together and no one's really guiding us in any particular direction. So it is scary. And I think, you know, what you've tapped into thematically with the album and the name of the album, having the word endings in there, you know, endings, even if it's, you know, even if it's a positive ending, a positive change, any sort of change is hard, you know, for humans. Yeah. We're not good at it. We're not good at adapting. It takes practice, and then we become more dynamic and resilient, etc. But not easy. And I think especially with relationships, and it's a subject I've been thinking about recently, because we've all had that, you know, we've all had friendships end, working relationships expire. And there is a level of trauma there, because, you know, you question then sort of trust and loyalty and, uh-huh. and all sorts of things. And I think it's quite a rocky road to find peace with that sometimes.
It can be, you know, I think because you question yourself, you question like everything that's kind of perhaps happened throughout the relationship, and you start to doubt things that you shouldn't doubt. And I don't think when people grow apart as well, I don't think that's a terrible thing. I think that's just the nature of being humans, and we all evolve differently. But it can be really sad, and you look inward, you think, could I have done things differently? And of course we all could do things differently, but you can't change what's happened, and for whatever's brought you to this moment, you've just got to try and make the most positive decision for yourself and your loved ones. And you know, and at moments you do have to be a little bit selfish. That's not to say that you sacrifice anyone else's feelings. I don't mean that. But at points you have to say, well, look, is this making either of us happy? Is this going to get worse before it gets better, or is it not going to get better? And I think that with a bit of age, I think you're able to kind of put things in perspective and know maybe where you, in some relationships, you can work towards something better because you're pulling in the same direction. And in other ones, you realize as time's going on, you're just getting further and further apart. But I think that's the story of life, as our parents always told us growing up. You know, things seem simpler when you're younger. Perhaps not for this generation, who have an awful lot in their lap. But you know, like, things that you do figure things out as you get older. I just turned 40 last year, and I've just turned 41 last week. It was the worst 40th year ever. Thank you.
I'm sure.
It was like the whole year just went like that in a fit of like, oh no.
Oh God.
But I do feel like, for want of a better phrase, an inner confidence growing. I think you're more aware of your identity as you get older. You're more aware of what does bring you joy. That life's a bit too short to really be, you know, struggling with things if you don't have to. You know, there's enough struggles in life without persevering with something that might not be worth it.
Again, this is something that's been massively on my mind. I mean, I'm of a similar age. I'm 40 next year, and it's been something, you know, there's been a lot of sort of life lessons going on. And we spoke to Deepak Chopra on this podcast, and there were so many things. I literally was like scribbling things down afterwards that I must remember to apply to my life. But one of them being that sometimes, or most of the time, to find peace, always pick the path that requires less effort. And I was so surprised by this because I was like, aren't I meant to be fighting for things, like fighting for relationships, fighting for what I want, fighting for what I believe in? But sometimes the power comes from letting go. And, you know, when we apply it to things like relationships, like we're talking about now, and there'll be a lot of people that will be dealing with this, as I sort of am at the moment with certain sort of situations in my life, where sometimes the best thing to do is nothing. So, you know, something's, you know, a relationship's ended, or there's some sort of problem going on, like you say, sometimes worth fighting for when you find some common ground. But other times there's the acceptance of this is expired, and I can walk away, and that's okay, rather than feeling guilty about it. That's something I'm learning now.
I think it's because, as you say, we trained ourselves to be this, oh, we have to be fighting for something at all times, for something to have value or worthwhile, you need to be fighting for it. And that's a kind of dangerous state of mind. And I think this lockdown and the virus has actually made us all reassess that and think, you know, the moments that we're, you know, touch wood, we don't go in lockdown again, but now we're back down to six people getting together at once. And it does make you kind of evaluate, for better or worse, where things come in that priorities list. And if you could only see, you know, two people or three people, who would they be? And I think we've had to train ourselves to not fight for the things that we can't win, you know. And life is short, you know. I'm definitely hitting my midlife crisis. but you know, like, life does, it's flying by, and it's not long enough to have to put yourself in really awkward situations if you don't have to. You know, I've felt like in the lockdown I've fallen back in love with the simplicity of playing music with my friends, rather than like the machinations of the industry and perhaps having my ego stroked on stage. You know, like, I've realized that actually what I cherish and need is to have a laugh with my two friends and make music. You know, like this morning, we've got a beautiful little puppy during lockdown, which I know a lot of people have. And my biggest highlight of the moment is, won't be rude, but when my dog does a number two, I'm running around. I'm going, like, me and my wife are just having the time of our lives. That's bringing the most joy to us at the moment. And we're laughing nonstop because we've never discussed toilets
so
as much in our entire life. Yeah. But, you know, we're high-fiving. We're high-fiving when the dog does something like that. And actually, I'm loving it because sometimes, you know, you sit and you... There's days where I watch too much news and I think, how are we going to get out of this? And then other days I think it's those moments of joy that matter. I think we're all still having this subconscious kind of battle with ourselves, that we know what makes sense, but there's a part of us that kind of is uncomfortable with being comfortable.
Absolutely. And I mean, that gets exasperated for people in your position because, you know, you live a high octane lifestyle normally. You know, you're traveling around the world. You could track, you know, three or four different countries in a week. You're gigging, there's crowds, you don't know where you are in the world half the time. It's really fast paced. And I guess there is no pause or even desire to stop and go, oh, wow, a simple moment, whatever that might be. So I think, you know, for all of us, that's been a real pleasure. But I'm imagining for you, that's been quite an extreme version of that, sort of really extracting yourself from that crazy carousel and having simple moments like your dog doing a number two.
It is. I mean, this is the most amount of time I've slept in my bed in about 20 years.
Wow.
Like, you know, the most amount of time we normally sleep at home is maybe a month maximum, you know, and so I've enjoyed that aspect. It's the strange thing for me was the creation, like to create an album and kind of have that momentum and the mental momentum of it and wanting to share it. And then not being able to take that logical next step, which is, as you say, travel and play it and take it all round. That's been tough to deal with because I feel a little bit purposeless at certain points, you know. But again, I feel like I've got a chance to kind of learn about myself a little more. And I feel like I don't lose value or identity by not being in tour. And, you know, initially I thought, oh, no, that's who I am. You know, if I'm not able to go and sing on stage, who am I? And does it devalue my worth in life and in this universe? And actually, it doesn't, you know, it's just a different thing. We're just going through a different moment. So I've quite enjoyed the simplicity and honestly, kind of forgetting my ego a little bit. You know, see, I'm sure you're the same when you've been in real intense periods of work and traveling and things and everything revolves around what you do and you live in this bubble and you kind of get a slightly inflated sense perhaps of self and what you're doing. You know, I'm not meaning you, but
yeah.
One.
You yeah. Listen, right
listen
now,
here. Who do you think you are?
No, I know what you mean. Like small things feel very stressful, but to anyone else, they'd be like, why are you worried about
using
on a book cover or something?
You know exactly. What I mean? And it does matter. It is important, but it's not that level of importance, that level of kind of mounting out of a molehill. And as I say, that's what I'm quite enjoying. When I've been hanging out with my family and things, I've really savoured being able to say, I'll see you next week. Little things like that, because I never normally get to do that, you know, and I'm not complaining. There's nothing I'd rather do than play music and take my songs around the world. But being able to say to my nephews and my nieces, oh, I'll see you next Friday. We'll come and hang out. You know, we'll go for a kick about and things. And it's those little things that I'm really savouring. So whenever I get too unsettled with the music side of things, I just think of that. And I have faith that as human beings, we need to share music, art. We need to be together. That's what we are. We're social creatures. And I know at some point when things are safer, we will get in rooms together. We will share these moments. We'll talk about this era because it's not just going to be a time period. It's going to be an era, really. But I think that we'll come out with this, with a wonderment of the world. And that's what I kind of hope. Maybe sounds a bit hippy-dippy.
I don't think at all. I think there will be, you know, there'll be some huge negatives and there'll be some brilliant positives. But like me and my mate were saying the other day, I just really want to stand in a field with loads of people I don't know and just dance. Like, just people I've never met before. I just really miss it, like, so desperately.
It's that connection, because that's my example I use. I don't even think about live music about me playing. I think about standing in a crowd when your eyes connect with someone you've never met before across a venue and you're both singing a lyric at the top of your voice. And there's that moment of pure electricity, pure magic. You might never see that person ever again, but you never forget that moment. You've just had this purest connection. And it's funny you and your friend are saying that, good, because I'm kind of hoping that that things don't slip to people's subconscious about a fear of lots of people.
I think the human need
for connection and intimacy, I think, will override that. But I know that there's elements of fear at the moment. But
I hope so, because it is so important. And I think sometimes the arts are, you know, devalued. Obviously, we all know the vast importance of the NHS right now and all the people that are working so hard. But we all do need escapism and art to speak to us.
As you all know, the Happy Place Festivals are back for 2024, and we have got some incredible names joining us. We've got Jason Donovan, Roxy Nafusi, Dorno Porter, Richie Norton, Olivia Atwood, Donna Ashworth, Denise Van Outen, Ugo Monya, and so many more still to be announced. There'll be a huge range of inspiring talks and workshops, a brand new area called the Nutrition Hub, lots of opportunities to try something new on our centre stage. And you can also listen to some beautiful poetry at our expressive arts area and so much more. You can find out more info and get your tickets now at happyplaceofficial.co.uk.
And, you know, I'm such a huge music lover, as you know, and I can't play an instrument. I'm not musical in the slightest. But for me, the joy purely comes from somebody often either playing an instrument or singing the words that relate to my story without them knowing anything about me. And that amazing alchemy of that's what I feel, but I didn't know how to articulate it.
Yes.
And that must be such a wonderful thing for you. I'm sure there's a catharsis in the writing process for you, but also knowing that you're actually reaching out to people and helping and creating solace and comfort. That must be a really lovely feeling.
Yeah, it does remind you of the power of music. And music, I love all art forms. I love art, I love movies, I love literature. There's something about music that is like so intimate. You know, it feels, see if you find a song that does say how you're feeling, like there's nothing beats that. You know, you can sit by yourself, listen to a song and feel a part of something. And I don't think there's any other kind of art form that does that. When I find it, as I'm getting older and writing more songs, my job is to turn off the fact that I know I'm going to be playing to lots of people or there's people going to be waiting for the songs, because I think if you're too aware that you're, or certainly for me, the way I create, if I'm too aware that someone else is going to interpret what I'm singing, it can make me then try and second guess my lyrics and things, yeah, or maybe wonder how will this be taken. And actually, the truest form of art is kind of like how it comes out, how you see it and how you hear it. And then, you know, kind of fingers crossed to a certain extent, people connect. But I do feel lucky, you know, we've written records about grief. I've written records about being married. I've written records about, you know, friendships deteriorating and things. And I think that's why I feel very fortunate with the connection with our fans, because the people that come to our shows, they feel the songs. And that's all I've ever wanted from my music, is someone to, you know, when I make eye contact with someone in a crowd and they're singing and I can see that their heart's pumping with this song. And I think, God, it's a tune that I wrote. It still blows my mind, and it's what gives me the energy of a 19-year-old when I'm on tour and on a stage. I mean, we still jump around, wear shirts off for 2 hours, which is patently ridiculous, but I'm never going to stop doing that. You know, if as soon as I feel like I don't have that level of energy or that level of commitment and love and passion for what I do, we'll stop. But thankfully, when people share our music and tell us their stories along with our music, it's glorious and it gives me life
yeah,
force.
Yeah, I mean, you guys always will, because, you know, I think all of your fans have that understanding that you're not going to write songs that are going to, you know, skip over subjects or kind of skirt on the outside of the subject. You're going to go right to the nucleus and you're going to bare your soul and talk about things, like you said, like grief. And I know, you know, one of your albums was based around the grief of losing your mother, and you know, you're talking about really personal situations that I'm sure kind of been comfortable to write, but perhaps had that element of you processing it as you're making the album. Is that how it happens?
Yeah, I think like a lot of people that write songs and things, I find it easiest to communicate through my songs. I probably say more through my music than I do to my friends and family, perhaps sitting, you know, even though we spend lots of time together, yeah, they'll figure out more about me from the songs. And I think there's perhaps a defence mechanism in that I can present it as art and it can be hidden if need be. There's been a couple of times where I've felt a layer of guilt about singing about, you know, my mum passing away, because ironically that album was like our first album that kind of became quite successful, for want of a better word. And I really struggled with that Because I feel like, have I just now cashed in on a feeling of sadness and kind of hollowness? And it took me a couple of years to realise, no, that's what makes me make art. I don't want to get up in the morning and write a song just about my breakfast or something. You know, I know that sounds ridiculous, but it needs to be something that I'm always going to care about, that I'm always going to feel and have that kind of same attachment, different relationship with the emotions, but that same attachment and appreciating how important it was then and how important the development of the feelings is now. But it has been tough at points. I think now with a bit of distance from that record in particular, I feel more comfortable and I now see this, I almost feel like I had a strength to write those songs, not to sound full of myself, but when I look back, I'm like, actually, it was quite brave and it was risky. But thank goodness I did it, because I would not have processed those feelings properly if I hadn't sung them, the songs over, you know, on tour, and then maybe the odd interview about the album and things. I think if I hadn't been forced to address it in that way, I wouldn't have addressed it, you know. And I think a lot of people in are like that in general, you know, when especially with grief, because you go into shock and everyone around is kind of like treating you with kid gloves and want to make sure you're okay, but everything goes into this weird kind of soft focus and you're not really yourself for a while, as I'm sure you know, lots of your listeners, you know, unfortunately it's just the human condition.
But that's why it is so important that you've channeled that into music, because I think really important subjects that are hard to talk about should be presented in varying ways. So, you know, in book form, in talks, in podcast, film, TV, poetry and music, because we need that sort of 360 approach to dealing with things that are hard to talk about. And it's interesting you say that you have found that process easier than sitting and talking to someone. And I can absolutely understand it. I mean, I've sort of similarly done the same with writing books, which is, you know, quite prolific in what I'm saying, and it is very much exactly as, you know, the story goes. But I would rather say to my mum, here you go read that.
Yeah, read
and then she's like, oh God, what the hell? You know, she has no clue, because I haven't told her, you know, that I had a panic attack or whatever, because it's too weird or awkward, or I don't know. It's still, you know, I spend my life talking about mental health, but I still have my own personal stumbling blocks, because it's a tricky thing. And I think these subjects being presented in different ways is of paramount importance. And I think also for men, you know, it sounds like you're generalizing, but we're kind of not, because we've seen the statistics. We know that male suicide rates are, you know, increasing year on year, and they far outweigh female suicide rates. And men do find it perhaps more difficult to talk about emotions or things that are going on in their lives. And I wonder how being in a group with two of your greatest mates, with Ben and James, have you had sort of an open dialogue? Have you had that sort of comfort to feel like you could talk if you wanted to?
To be honest, that's probably more of a recent thing. I think, sadly, it is generalising, but most young men don't want to talk about that kind of thing. They feel like that the vulnerability is a sign of weakness or something. I feel like the generation coming of age just now, I think, have a much healthier perspective and point of view on that. For my kind of generation, it just wasn't the done thing. And one of my really good friends is one of my favourite artists, a fella called Scott Hutchison, who was a singer in a band called Frightened Rabbit. And he committed suicide a couple of years ago. And he was someone that, from the outside, expressed himself beautifully through his music. He's in a band with his brother. He was idolised by many, many people and a real source of inspiration. And he just couldn't overcome his own battles, you know, but from the outside it was looking like, oh, he's processing this, and sadly he succumbed to suicide and thought that was his best way out, and it's absolutely heartbreaking when you see someone that you think has strength in everything. And men have dealt with it all wrong for a long time, you know, and I think it's been swept under the carpet. And I think just being able to say, hey, excuse my French here, but I feel shit. You know, I feel shit. I don't even know why. I think that that's like, don't be afraid to say that you don't know why you don't feel right. You know, not everything comes with a reason. And I think that's part of it, is oh, I don't feel it, but I don't know why, everything's fine, so whatever, I'll just go on with it. And actually, you can neglect yourself in a really dangerous way. But for myself and the boys in the band, in the last few years, since our friend Scott and everything, is, we've been very aware that, look, you can't keep these things in. You know, it's nice to put an arm around someone and just say, hey, I hope you're all right. But actually see, express it, you know, like if you are feeling like you're just going down, spiraling down, then kind of put a hand up for someone to help you, because otherwise people don't know. And everything's so, just in this era of everything being so visible with social media and everything, we all put on our best displays where we can. And we can never forget that as humans, we have that kind of uncertainty inside and that vulnerability, and ego shouldn't get in the road. So yeah, it's something we've discovered recently. We've had ups and downs, and part of that's been our dynamic as a band has changed at points. You know, sometimes you're getting on like a house on fire, other times you want to set their house on fire. but you know, I think, but again, any worthwhile relationship has that ups and downs, but yeah. It's as we were saying earlier, if there's something worth fighting for, if you feel that you can help each other out. And you know, if any of your listeners don't know, Ben and James, the other guys in my band, are twins as well. So it's a really unique dynamic we have. We've been friends from when we were like 7 years old and been a band from when we were 13. So, I mean, this is our teenage childhood band. And that's when it's easy to kind of put your feelings to the side. You know, for 20 years, it's like, hey, we're on this great journey. No, nothing matters. We're bulletproof, bouncing off. And then suddenly you're like, oh, or something happens in your life and you're just winded. So we've discovered a healthy way recently, sadly. I wish I could say it's been for longer, but for me, I had a bit of a turning point on tour a few years ago when it was 2013, actually. I had a bit of a, for want of a better phrase, a bit of a kind of breakdown in tour that I landed in Toronto at the airport, and I just couldn't, physically my body couldn't take me through the airport. And then I get like putting a gurney and everything, and it was one of those where I'd been neglecting myself for so long and been on the treadmill for like at that point probably 10 years without coming up for air. And after that moment, I discovered meditation. I tried medication for a bit, which I don't think anyone should be afraid of. You know, if you need to take some medication to help you get yourself balanced, I think that's absolutely fine. You know, I cut down on my drinking and everything, realized that wasn't a way through. And so you do have these, looking back on what we've been doing, I see these moments, these key moments, and we've been lucky that we kind of made the right choices at the right times. Sometimes in those moments, you know, there's forks in the road. If you make the wrong choice, it's really hard to go back. But I feel that every time we've hit those huge stumbling blocks, or we've needed each other, or we've needed to reassess our lifestyle, we've done that. And I think that's, the friendship has helped us do that. But as we've gotten older, it's becoming much healthier, and we're more aware of it in advance now rather than waiting for the drama to happen.
Yes.
And go, what do we do?
That's just from experience, isn't it? Because I think, like you say, you know, you have these stumbling blocks and you make good choices or bad, and then you learn it and you try again. And it's so good that you do all talk now. And I think, you know, we need to have that discussion on a, you know, really focusing on men, because I know even looking at my podcast, there'll be a breakdown of more women listening than men. And it still seems like these sorts of conversations to men feel like, oh, it's not for me. But it's fundamentally about being human, living life, not feeling ashamed about anything. You know, you touched on something so important there, talking about, you know, your steps out of having that breakdown or that big patch for you there, because, you know, I've had exactly the same. I had a huge depressive sort of year, and I went on medication to just get my head above the ground to sort of start off. And then you know, I've sort of made lots of positive life changes that feel right now. But I think it doesn't matter what route you take, it's as long as you know that you're making any sort of change or trying something to change your point of focus, I guess, really.
That's exactly it. To feel, I mean, earlier we're talking about relinquishing control in certain aspects, but seeing in that instance, it feels nice to feel that, no, I'm going to try and kind of help myself through this. Would you say you rely more like on your family or your friends? You know, who's your kind of sounding board?
Yeah. I guess
sometimes it's tough to say to your parents, you know, because you just, sometimes you think, oh, I don't want to Yeah.
Not my mum. God bless. I love my mum, but it's, she'll get way too stressed. So I think, you know, I like you, really very much rely on practical things like meditating and doing yoga. But also I'm really lucky in the fact that my husband's, you know, he's recovering drug and alcohol addict, and he's been sober for 8 years. So we can have really great chats about all the sorts of weird sort of thought processes and things that we'll be going through. And I feel really grateful for that relationship. And I don't think you necessarily need lots of those soundboards. I think it is just knowing you've got some really trustworthy ones.
It's knowing they're there. You're absolutely right.
It is. I'm really interested to know what does your meditation practice look like? You know, how much has that changed your life, and how do you implement it into your day?
Well, it's transcendental meditation I do, which is, it's two sets of 20 meditations for 20 minutes. So like a 20 minute meditation in the morning, and you're given I did a course on it and everything, and you're given your mantra, and you're, you know, it's actually a beautiful few day course. Yeah. It was one of those things where I was a little bit like, oh yeah, I'll go and try it. I don't think this is for me. And as soon as I was in there, I was like, no, this feels right. I need this. And again, so I would say any men listening, or anyone listening, but men in particular who sometimes are resistant to these kind of things, give it a try. You know, you'll be amazed at how you feel and how it clears your brain. But so, yeah, so once in the evening, once in the morning, 20-minute mantra. And it's the way it was described to me that helped was it just retrains your brain. So sometimes when you're in those moments, you go straight to the reaction. You know, like you go straight from something happens and react. And actually you miss this whole kind of middle part of your brain. I'm sure that's medically the part of your brain.
but it's science there, that part right there.
But, you know, like you're not processing the thought and not actually putting it in perspective or in context. And that's where I became just a tighter and tighter coiled spring. And that was when, as I say, I reached the moment where I had a proper do. And then doing the meditation, it just really unraveled me. I just felt like it, in a good way. Sorry, yeah, that's perhaps an unfortunate, but it unwound me. And I also read a lot of about Stoicism, which is, I don't know if you've read much or you've dipped your toes. It's a book particularly I've got called The Daily Stoic. And it's these old meditations from back in the day. It's like philosophers like Seneca and Marcus Aurelius, who I thought was just a character in the Gladiator movie.
Turns out
he was an actual fellow. Yeah. Yeah. And it's beautiful. See the way that they discuss yourself in the world, and how, you know, really one of the only things we have control is what's going on in here. And if we can train ourselves to not be as affected by the outward influences and inspirations and pressures, then everything becomes easier to deal with. And actually reading the Stoicism with my TM, I felt like I was breathing differently. I felt like my head was going from kind of like walking around like that to, you know, like,
wow.
Like that. And the Stoicism is what I go back to. I still meditate every day. I don't read the Stoicism every day unless I feel like I'm kind of perhaps going down and I need just a little recontextualization of who I am and where I am in the world. I hope I'm not coming across sounding self-obsessed.
I'm here to interview you. That's what it's meant to be.
Absolutely. But I honestly recommend it. There's like a little note, a little quote for every day, and it explains it through. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful book, and it's really helped me. I've been reading it now for about 5 years. It's just a daily thing, you know, 365 quotations, but it's a really wonderful thing. And it just, whenever I feel like things are becoming a bit too oppressive or on my shoulders, I read that, and it just reminds me, you know what? Things have been happening for millions of years. What I think is the most important and worrying thing right now, if I zoom out and I see it in context, even just in the small town I live in, never mind zooming out to the country, zooming out to the world, it doesn't effing matter.
Yes.
It's not important.
Oh,
you
God,
know?
I know. So, and has this in any way impacted your creativity in a good way or bad? And I say that because I find this quite fascinating, specifically about, I guess, musicians, poets, writers, that often, well, and I've interviewed obviously lots of people in the world of the arts, sometimes their what they deem their greatest work comes from a real place of pain. And I wonder if through your own healing, you've had moments of going, oh God, can I access those parts of me if I'm feeling okay?
Yes, I have worried. I mean, especially my band, we play obviously quite intense music at points. Sometimes we make pop music, but sometimes I'm screaming. And there's been times where I have thought, am I losing that anger? And actually, it's finding a different type of anger. Right. It's not, you know, there's sometimes the anger can be pure visceral and it can be pure catharsis. But then even the act of then recording that song 18 months later, it becomes something different. So for me, in those moments of creation, I do like to feel fragile and vulnerable, which I find tougher when I want to become stronger in my mind, of mind and of heart and body. I do find that tough, but I feel, again, fortunate that we've been a band for a long time. So I can wait for those moments where I feel like, no, this is, I'm down in that moment and this is pure heartfelt, it's dark, but I know I can come back to the light. Whereas I felt like that was all I had for a while. Yeah. You know, I felt like I was writing so many songs so quickly in quick succession, going on tour, coming straight home, straight back into it, you know, and felt there was no break. Now I feel like it's okay to not feel like writing a song for a month or two. You know, I now don't feel the guilt of that. It's like, well, I'll know when it's time. And I'm not the kind of person that most creative people do write from the more negative feelings and the darkness. You know, it's kind of, for some reason, it's what's most inspiring to us humans. You know, joy doesn't necessarily make you want to create in the same way. And, it's something I worry about, but I'm not panicking about, because I know I've probably still got enough things unsettled inside me that I know they'll still rear their head, and I'm ready. I've got my antenna up for when that happens.
But it's just interesting. I think it will be just so, you know, fascinating to see where you guys go as a band next, knowing that, you know, you're all in a different place personally, perhaps, and also as a band with how you speak to each other and how that open dialogue continues and how you observe simply human emotion. I think it's going to be fascinating to see where you guys go next, and I'll certainly be waiting for whatever that turns into.
Oh, thank you so much, Fionn. Thank you. Yes, you know what, we're in such a weird time, but I think we have to kind of embrace this chaos as much as we can and try and find the silver linings on the cloud, because you know what, it's we're going through a traumatic experience at the moment. We all are, in different ways. But it is, it's an existential thing we're dealing with. But you know what? There's ways through this. We're a strong, we're adaptable species. As we said just before we started, how many new skills have we all discovered and learned since the lockdown began? And we've been adaptable and we're good at it. And you know,
I can make literally anything out of a cardboard box for my kids now. Number one skill. I can make a pirate ship, a pirate hat, a sword. I've done it all. I've sussed it.
Mate, I think I want to come and play at your house.
Yeah, right. We've got it all going on here. Simon, thank you so much. What an absolute joy. I've been so looking forward to recording this episode, and it's just lovely to catch up with you. And stay safe and keep creating and making your beautiful music, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks so much, Fionn. Such a pleasure to talk to you as always.
Our big thanks to the wonderful Simon Neil. A real treat to have more than 5 minutes with you, sir. What a gent. Thank you. Now, next Monday, we'll be back with another Happy Place. So make sure you subscribe to hear new episodes when they drop. Spread the word. Tell your friends if you think they will like this podcast. And look, a huge thank you to everyone that has left a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find the show. So I appreciate that. Go tell people about your favourite guest. Do it now. Do it now. Thank you to Simon, to the producer, Matt Hill at Rethink Audio. Thank you, Matt. And to you for listening. I'll see you next week. Stay safe, lovelies.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.